I'm Lizzie O'Leary from Slate, and you're listening to The Takeaway. Almost every single part of our lives has been disrupted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Schools have been closed, weddings postponed, and public spaces are nearly empty. But something else that's changing in a major way is how we mourn those we've lost. Around the country, the funeral industry is struggling to keep up with the growing number of deaths from COVID-19. Funeral directors are being forced to adapt their practices and traditions in this age of social distancing. For some, that means going completely virtual, holding memorials on Zoom or Facebook Live. For others, it means limiting the number of funeral attendees to just immediate family. And what's happening now is likely to shift how we grieve in the future, too. For more on this, we turn to two funeral directors on the front lines, in Southfield, Michigan, and New York City, respectively. Stephen Kemp is director of Kemp Funeral Home and Cremation Services and a spokesman for the National Funeral Directors Association. Amy Cunningham is a funeral director and owner of Fitting Tribute Funeral Services. Amy, Stephen, thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Lizzie.
Also with us is Gary Latterman, a professor of American Religious History at Emory University and author of the forthcoming book, Don't Think About Death, A Memoir on Mortality. Gary, welcome to the program.
Thanks a lot.
Stephen, I want to start with you. You've been working as a funeral director for a long time in Southfield, Michigan. How has the work you do shifted over the past few weeks?
Well, I feel more now, especially in the last, week and a half, I feel more like I'm a triage physician in an ER that's really being pressed because of the sheer numbers that are occurring in our community right now. My zip code where my funeral home is located is the largest outbreak outside the city of Detroit, which I'm connected to the city of Detroit, but I'm just outside of that. And so we're experiencing now on this last 10 days, a week of exponential growth of deaths.
Have you stopped doing in-person funerals altogether?
No, we have not. Presently, according to Governor Whitmer, we can do up to 50 people 6 feet apart. And so we've been doing that. I have a pretty large chapel here, so we've been doing that, and people having their services, and we're simulcasting the funeral to people who cannot make it.
How do you balance the kind of direction you get from, say, Governor Whitmer with your obligations to a family and sort of figure out a happy medium there?
That's our duty as professionals. We have, we serve our families as best we can, and these are challenging times, so you take what the rules are and the social distancing, and you have to explain to the family how important it is that we do this because of the large communicability of this virus, that we have to be 6 feet apart. You cannot have, and we will be policing that, you cannot have more than 50 people at the service. If not, we'll have to shut it down. The reception has been pretty good to it. I mean, it's almost like a shock to begin with because the death oftentimes has become so insidious and quick that families really don't have time to grasp actually what happened to him. You know, I just finished with one this morning where she's actually an ER nurse. And it was her mother. She had just talked to him 5 minutes before. Another person had talked to him 5 minutes before. She called him again. She wasn't answering the phone. She could see her through the window. And she died right in her chair. And, the daughter is just beside herself. So,
Amy, I imagine you are probably wrestling with some similar things. You're in New York City, where I am, another hotspot. Are you taking similar steps as Stephen?
Yes, I think we're even ahead of Detroit in that we are recommending families only have the simplest kind of graveside service gatherings so we can manage burials and have 6 to 8 people around the grave standing a safe distance apart. Our cremations currently are mostly direct cremations with a memorial service planned by Zoom afterwards.
Wow. Do you have to walk families through kind of what they can and can't do? And how do they handle that?
One thing that has been surprising is that deaths in the home, sometimes out of hospice care, deaths from COVID-19 in the home, in those cases, the family calls 911, the medical examiner arrives, and currently they're not wishing to claim all those cases. So I've been speaking to 3 or 4 families a day with a deceased person in the house, guiding them through the new reality of the fact that they have a home funeral on their hands. And I try to get them to light a candle and make the space sacred and bring flowers in from the yard until they wait for the funeral homes that are so overwhelmed it sometimes takes some hours to arrive.
Gary, I want to zoom out a little bit. Can you talk a bit about the state of the funeral industry before this pandemic hit and the kind of capacity that was in the system for the number of deaths we're seeing now, like we're hearing Stephen and Amy describe?
We're under extraordinarily unusual circumstances. So I think everyone is just trying to think on their feet and not get too overwhelmed, even though all these bodies are overwhelming. There's a lot one could say about trends in the funeral industry before all this hit, but one that I find somewhat interesting and I think, you know, obviously by necessity accelerating is, you know, funerals without a body and sort of raising the question of how important is it to have a body present during a funeral. And I think more and more people in the 21st century is more comfortable without the body present. You know, and now we're seeing, again, you know, kind of forced decisions and other kinds of pressures that are really shaping a whole new terrain for thinking about how we dispose of our dead.
Well, let's go into that a little bit. Stephen, I would imagine that this pandemic has affected the methods used to care for bodies of the deceased and perhaps maybe some traditional burial customs that are parts of different faiths.
In terms of handling people, I haven't changed my methods. We always use universal precautions. Tell people whether it's a 90-year-old lady from a nursing home or a medical examiner case, we treat everyone like they're infectious or have a communicable disease. And that way you don't slip you can't depend on a death certificate or notification oftentimes because maybe what I'm beginning to notice here is we don't have a diagnosis, confirmed COVID diagnosis by the time that they pass. And sometimes that may come afterwards and it's too late for us to even know, you know, their diagnosis is pneumonia or flu. And we find out some days later that they were COVID positive. So we treat everybody like they're infectious.
Amy, do you worry at all about the space available to hold bodies in places like New York City? You know, thinking of morgues and cemeteries and some of the kind of frightening stories we've seen over the last few days.
The city has been scrambling to provide portable morgues for the hospitals, and now they're helping funeral professionals get the equipment they need, and conversations are ongoing about where to put all the deceased bodies. One thing I was teaching and thinking prior to all this is that I've been helping folks understand that a funeral is not just an hour-long event or a single viewing. We need to expand our awareness of what a funeral can be. And it's really a grieving year that we're encountering. And these families can see opportunities in that time allowed that expand beyond the service they feel they've lost.
Stephen, you mentioned the precautions you're taking, and I'm thinking about these two funerals in Albany, Georgia, that have been linked to the spread of COVID-19 there. You know, the idea was that the funerals were these sort of super spreading events. And I guess I wonder how you talk to people about taking, you know, these very sort of rigorous mental precautions at a time when really they are governed by their emotions or want a hug or, you know, need that human connection. Is it hard for people to get that dual message?
Yeah, I think it is. It's very difficult. You know, I'm fortunate enough to know most of the clients that I serve, and I know their families, have known them for many years. And the key to tell them is at the arrangement conference, whether it be at their house or here, or virtual online, we're doing a lot of them online, is I have to tell them what the rules are. And I hand them out what Governor Whitmer's order says and that we plan on following it. And oftentimes they hem and haw and say, well, can we wait? And I said, you sure can, to plan at a later date to have a memorial. But oftentimes a lot of them say, well, we really want to get it done. And, you know, let's just have the service with 50 or 10. Or they do immediate cremation and have them decide to have memorial service at a later point.
Gary, I'm thinking a lot about the Civil War these days. There's a remarkable book called This Republic of Suffering, written by the former president of Harvard, Drew Gilpin Faust, where she talks about the intimacy that people gathered with death during the Civil War. And it was a real tectonic shift for the way Americans thought about death. And I guess I wonder, is it overblown to think about this as perhaps analogous in the way that this epidemic is touching so many people?
Civil War definitely is an interesting kind of touchstone historically. But you can also think of other episodes of what I and others would refer to as mass death. You know, massive amounts of death, public awareness and consciousness of death to large numbers of people. Obviously, this happens during times of war, but also during, you know, epidemics. You know, that's a whole other level to this. In addition to the sort of individual existential realities of the kinds of deaths that you're hearing my colleagues talk about on the radio show, there's also the collective impact of the total sort of overwhelming number of dead that will have surely a long-lasting repercussions in our collective consciousness, in how we think about America and how we think about some of the larger social transformations that are likely ahead.
Amy, I wonder about that sort of individual grief compounded with mass societal grief. What does that mean, do you think, for the people you're serving and how they process maybe the death of a loved one in the middle of a pandemic gripping their city?
There will be community in these numbers and new rituals that may emerge out of all this creative energy. I think rituals say what our words cannot. So as a community, we'll be supporting each other and finding new ways to grieve. I found that online Zoom services are surprisingly moving, that somehow out of this adversity, wisdom is springing and we're discovering new things about technology that we hadn't anticipated.
And people don't seem to hunger for the kind of physical contact that often comes with ritual?
I know they do, but how else can we manage, you know? Through our eyes, through our voices, we're lighting candles and using music and just trying to enter in to this grief rather than resisting it. I do tell folks that closure is a mirage. Some folks say, oh, I wish I could have the closure that a funeral might bring. Well, I think this weight of the grief we will carry for the rest of our lives, this is historic. And to use that grief to comfort others, to be a stronger person going forward, to let your love for the person you've lost move you into new directions is perhaps the potential of this tragic time.
Gary, what do you think the biggest way this pandemic will transform the way we mourn is?
The loss of intimacy and thinking, you know, how do we do right by our dead in these circumstances is going to require new kinds of ritual innovation, all kinds of new ways to create meaning and to really mark what every society, you know, marks, which is this rite of passage.
Stephen, I'm going to give you the last word. For someone listening to this who may have just lost a family member or a friend to COVID-19, what advice would you give them?
What I would advise is that take a deep breath. This is a new kind of reality that we're dealing with right now, but we're here to take care of whatever needs they want. And we typically can be very flexible, but the rules, you know, we have to look at a general public health in whole. And, you know, what I tell people is that, you know, we are the end care healthcare workers. And if we're not there, nothing can really happen. And, you know, let us handle some of your grief and let us be the professionals we can and try to handle, do what you want us to do with the constraints and the paradigms that are left us. And that's what a funeral professional is for. I tell people, I don't deal with the dead, I deal with the living every day. So it's important that people follow through with their rituals and as much as they can in this new kind of reality.
Stephen Kemp is director of Kemp Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Southfield, Michigan. Amy Cunningham is a funeral director and owner of Fitting Tribute Funeral Services in New York City. And Gary Latterman is a professor of American Religious History at Emory University. Thank you all so much for joining me.
Absolutely, my honor and pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Thank you.